Hey everyone, and welcome to another episode of Divination. Divination is a podcast and video show by Elegant Themes, the creators of Divi, the ultimate WordPress theme and visual page builder. Now, the goal of Divination is really simple. We want to provide you with the knowledge, insights, and supportive community that you need to be successful with WordPress and Divi. I'm your host, Nathan B. Weller, and as your host, it's my job to facilitate that success by having various guests from the Divi and wider WordPress community onto the show to share their stories and experiences with you. Today, I'm interviewing Andrew Toussaint, and as I say that, I kind of realize that I should really make it common practice to specifically ask all of our guests to pronounce their last names, because for some reason that doesn't sound right to me. Anyway, Andrew, or Drew, as I noticed he goes by on Facebook, is the owner of Evil Empire Creative, that's based out of Nebraska. As a studio, they provide their clients with a whole slew of services that include branding, web design, web marketing, automation, social media, and email marketing. They're huge fans of Divi because it allows them to turn out both websites and marketing materials like landing pages faster and more effectively than ever before. When I caught up with Andrew on Skype recently, he shared the story of how Evil Empire Creative got started, how they scaled, and the structure and workflows that make what they do possible. And of course, how Divi fits into all of it. It was a really fun talk to participate in, and I hope everyone out in the Divi Nation enjoys it too. Here it is. Andrew, welcome to Divi Nation.
Thank you so much. This is really cool for me because I've had a lot of conversations with a lot of people. I do a lot of public speaking. It's always fun.
Yeah.
But this one is extra cool for me because I've watched your show for a long time. I'm an OG diehard Divi user, so it's my agency. So it's like, I've seen you online a lot, and so that's have this conversation is pretty cool for me too. So I'm excited.
Thank you. It's always surreal when someone says I watch your show. I'm like, wait, what? Like,
and is it kind of creepy? Is it weird?
Not for me. I can see how it would be for people, but I used to work at a production company, and we would spend hours and hours and hours editing someone, like an interview or something, in an editing booth somewhere. So I would occasionally meet those folks in person, and I'd be like, oh, hey, how you doing? And I jump into all this detail, and they're like, who are you? Yeah. I'm like, oh, don't worry, I've just watched 30 hours of video on you, no big deal.
Right. I know a lot about you.
Yeah. And then just dead eye. I know a lot about you. Yeah. So, hey, I like to start these things off by giving people a little peek into your day-to-day life. So, first of all, let's get the full-on introduction. Andrew, what is your first last name? Where are you located? What's your company name?
My name is Andrew Toussaint. I'm the founder and CEO of Evil Empire Creative here in Lincoln, Nebraska. Evil is spelled E-V-O-L, so it's love spelled backwards. We get a lot of people ask us, like, is that like evil, like evolution? Like, no, it's we say it evil, like maniacal villain, right? For us, evil really means like do what you love. Love what you do front to back. Okay. So a little play on words. Also some Star Wars theme in there. We're big culture dorks. Also, my wife feels that all of my Star Wars stuff looks a lot better at the office than it does at the house.
Yeah. I noticed some comic books behind you there.
Yeah. When we're done with this, I'll show you the toy shelf.
Oh, cool.
Desktop collectibles. I'm sorry.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Gotta get my name convinced. Yeah. No, so we're an agency of 24. Everything's done in house. We're really, really proud of what we've built. This is my second agency, so Evil is actually coming up on its 1 year mark next month. So May 20th, 2016
was when we opened up. Congratulations!
Thank you. It's been a ride, man. Like when we started, it was just me at a dedicated desk in a shared workspace here in Lincoln. The last agency that I owned was in Denver. And so I lived here in Lincoln like 30 years ago, and my wife and I have three kids, and we really wanted to change a pace. Denver's amazing. The business community was fantastic to us. I mean, the agency that I was a part of and started in my basement is still there downtown.
Oh, cool.
We just really got tired of the population density, right? Like, if we wanted to take the kids to go do something on a Saturday, like, regardless of what it was or where it was an all-day production. And so, Lincoln is an amazing pocket of the country with everything that's going on out here with the Silicon Prairie. I don't know if you follow that, but, like, amount of technology out here, it's insane. Like, there are so many startups and tech companies alike from California picking up and moving here.
And is it just expense-driven and that's resulted in, like, a culture growth?
It's I think a little bit of both, right? I mean, cost of living is dramatically different than California. I've relocated a few employees from California, and like their quality of life, especially from a financial standpoint, is like, but the culture side too. I mean, it's like the startup community here is very, very involved. It's really neat. I've been an entrepreneur most of my life, and I know the importance of like networking, referrals, connections, so on and so forth. It's like the way that this pocket of the country reinforces itself is bonkers. Like the amount of referral business that we get that leads us into other markets too, where it's like not just Lincoln, not just Omaha area. You know, it's like, hey, I've got a guy that you need to meet in Miami, right? And then we're really good at developing the relationship and spinning more referrals out of it. So it's like we've started working in a lot of markets because of the referrals we've spun from this market. So it's really neat. So long back to what I was saying is, you know, Angie, my wife and I, when we were looking at where we were going to go and where we were going to start the next agency, Lincoln just made so much sense because of what's happening here. So it's been almost a year, like I said, and it's just been a nuts ride. This month has been really cool. Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, I was just gonna say, well, as someone who's running an agency, and you, I don't know if you mentioned just a second ago, but you mentioned to me before we started recording at least that you got 24 folks in your agency, 24 employees. Does that include yourself?
That includes myself, yeah.
Okay, so as the CEO of a company with 20 plus people in it, what's your day? What's your typical day like?
Man, that is a loaded question.
It's probably all over the place, but I imagine you, as someone who, as we'll get into later, values systems, you probably have some kind of order to the chaos.
I do. I have my personal system and then I have my business system.
Okay.
My personal system starts at 4 a.m. every single day. I love the morning, man. I've got three humans. My kids are amazing, 9, 3, and 1, but they don't get up at 4. So between the hours of 4 and 6 a.m., I get so much done. It's like my little pocket of solitude. I write a lot of proposals during those hours. As much as it hurts my heart, I'm not executing as much as I used to. So like the amount of times that I run builds or I'm writing code or designing assets, it's few and far between. But my mornings, that's where I hop in and I help run projects and push projects along. And it's a good time for me in the morning to really reflect on what's going on. I've got a great leadership team, you know, but at the end of the day, as scary as it is, it's all on me too. You know, like I have to steer the ship. So I use that time to really get a sense of where we're at, where we're going. Are we on pace to hit our quarterly goals, revenue, growth, reach, so on and so forth. And then I'm in the office and it's just really working with my leadership team to making sure the day is moving along nicely. The majority of my time in the office is spent in sit downs with my clients, current and prospective. That's one piece that I never want to get away from. We're so relationship driven here. And regardless of the size of the project, if I have the opportunity to sit eyeball to eyeball with my client or my prospective client, that really allows me to get a sense of who they are, what they do, what's their value prop, but then most importantly, like what's the problem that we're trying to solve? What's the pain point, and how do we use technology on the advertising side and the development side to get them where they want to be? So that's the majority of my days is really sitting down with my clients and figuring out where are we going, kind of deal.
Nice. And so, when it comes to doing that, I mean, what are you? When you get in, you just spent 4 to 6 a.m. doing your personal work, and then you come in, and it seems like it's a lot of, like, removing friction from other people's day and meeting with clients. Cool. Is that, you know, is there a breakup, like a 20, 80, 60, 40 breakup of how that usually flows, or is it just whatever's needed that day?
It's really whatever's needed that day. You know, my business development team, we've got several folks on that side of it, and they pull me in for some of those meetings with the clients when needed. I don't really control my own calendar either. So it's like, I just kind of show up and do what I'm told.
That's a funny thing. Actually, that's a good point that I want to bring up is it seems like when you get to a certain scale and when you get to a certain place in leadership, you really, maybe more than anybody else in the company, become a servant of the system. Like you have to, you're kind of a slave to whatever needs to happen. And when you show up, like you said, like you're not in control of your calendar and there's an itinerary for you to follow and you just have to jump in there and do it. It's funny because it's almost like there's bookends. Like you get that at an entry level position and then you get that all the way back up at the top. You know?
Yep. And then in between, you're just wearing all the hats.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. That's all it is. No, it's a good point. And it's so true though, because it's like, once you, I mean, we're big believers in we're only as good as the people we surround ourselves with. And we knew that from day one. And we know that like our team needs us.
Yeah.
When I say us, I mean our leadership team. And so we are definitely here to serve. We are at their mercy during working hours.
That's something I really want to talk about today. And we usually talk about, you know, like how'd you get into WordPress and whatever. But I think that we've got enough to cover in the areas of agency building, scaling, company culture and systems that I think we can safely jump into instead of how'd you get started in WordPress to how did you first build an agency and get to where you're kind of at now.
Yeah. I will truncate the Denver journey. I spent several years in Denver with my agency that we started in the basement, grew it. It's still there. From what I know, it's doing well. I made my exodus the tail end of 2015 for several reasons. But how we scaled and grew Evil at the rate that we did, to be honest, was we looked at what we did well in Denver and we looked at what we did not do well, right? We objectively looked at the stuff that we screwed up because, you know, there was a lot of learning by doing, a lot of trial by fire.
Yeah.
Sometimes it worked and man, sometimes did it miss the mark. So my wife, Angie, she's far smarter than I am. She's finishing her doctorate right now. She has two masters, one in business administration and operations. So like she was very fundamental in me spinning up Evil, especially from like the foundation HR paperwork side, because I'm not that guy, not even close. So we really understood what we're good at and what we needed to stay away from. One of the things that I learned the hard way in Denver, and I think a lot of people go through this when they're becoming an entrepreneur or they're spinning up an agency, or, you know, whatever they're doing, aside, not just in the web world either, is you try to be everything to everyone.
Sure.
And that sucks.
Yeah, that's a trap. I mean, it's just a trap.
It is. It's the worst. So we knew here are the three things that we kick ass at and we're really, really good at. We're going to focus on these. Now, obviously, we've scaled our deliverables and our services since then. But when we started Evil, we knew we were going to be the best web design shop in the region. We were going to roll social media for our clients, and then content was going to be a big focus for us. A year later, like I said, we're playing in a lot of other spaces. But it was really dialing in on what is it that we are going to be known for? And then from there, knowing that we are only going to be as good as the people we surround ourselves with. So we have to hire high caliber talent. But to hire high caliber talent, you have to attract high caliber talent. To attract high caliber talent, you have to have a culture that's awesome. And to do like it's all like what comes first, the chicken or the egg, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so we ground
it. So what was it for you? Yeah.
We when we started, we grew really fast. But I'm a hustler at heart. I've been an entrepreneur forever. I've been in sales forever. And so what I did is about 2 months before we moved to Lincoln, I created a little home office back at the house that we started the Denver agency in. And I pounded the phones, man. I leveraged my personal network so hard and just talked to people, right? Whether they were a prospect or not, or they could get me to do a prospect, it was really just telling the story and building value in why I'm going to build that website. That was number one, was let's really build that side of the business, because the likelihood of being able to convert them over to an advertising client is pretty high once they really see our efficiencies. Yeah.
So your goal was always get people in the door with, I guess to back up, is always first build relationships, leverage relationships to get website clients, and then once you have happy website clients, upsell to other services. That's kind of your basic model.
Correct. And that model has evolved like umpteen thousand times in the last year, right? Because before we started this, you're talking about how you're such a fan of systems, but I think the analogy you gave was you put 10 people in a room to build a website, and like the plan of attack that first time is not efficient.
Yeah, you know? It's just whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the idea of approaching something for the first time you're always going to do it on like your default settings. Just like you would never launch an enterprise site with just a bare bones install of WordPress. That's the default, right? Everything you put on top of that is, you know, and everybody knows the power of the plugins, themes, and then customizations to all of the above. So, so that's kind of what we're going to get into, I guess, next with, you know, it sounds like getting started and ramping up your business was very much a focus on what's good, build those relationships, get those first clients. I guess maybe just as a side note real quick, I don't want to spend much time on it, but can you tell me, in order to get to where you wanted to be, did you have I would imagine a higher ballpark price range than most people in the community? What kind of budgets were you looking at for those projects to kind of get the business going?
I mean, it really would always depend on scope, obviously. I mean, when we were working with the local business owner, our initial price points, they've changed a lot too.
Yeah.
You know, because as we develop more clout, like we just won the Forbes Agency Council Award. So it's like when you have that kind of different levels of clout, you know, obviously that drives price, supply and demand, so on and so forth. But our initial approach, brochure build, you know, 10 pages out of the box, was starting at about $3,500.
Okay.
And then that price point would go up based on like customization. Are we doing photo, videos, custom content, so on and so forth. We've now gotten to the point where that same build, 10-ish pages, photos, some video for like video background and whatnot, is starting at about $8,000 to $10,000.
Mm-hmm.
And then functionality from there, e-com, systems, whatever, that also drives budget. So,
gotcha.
I mean, the range that we close is pretty drastic.
Yeah.
But it always comes down to needs analysis and figuring out like what is it I get these emails all the time. What's it going to cost me to build a website?
Let's talk. Let's
figure. Yeah. Right.
So that actually I think ties us back into the systems, because I wanted to talk about a lot today about the role that culture and systems play in allowing you to scale. Because you get those first initial clients, you learn a lot. You start making adjustments. What are those adjustments? What are the systems that grow out of those hard lessons?
Right.
And specifically, what have you put into practice? Not just generally, but what have you guys found that really works? And how does that mesh with your culture?
I'm gonna pull a Quentin Tarantino. Okay.
In five chapters.
In five chapters, working backward with a lot of guts. So systems are super important for us. They're number two. And culture's number one.
Okay.
So that's my Quentin Tarantino's. I'm going to foreshadow that culture is everything. Then we're going to talk systems, and then we'll go back to culture.
Okay, great.
So systems, I mean, we've been Basecamp users from day one. I really, really got plugged into Basecamp back in like the Basecamp 2 days with my last agency, and I loved it.
Yeah.
To the point where, you know, I have OCD, my wife has OCD, we have a Basecamp to run our lives. we are believers in that system. But that's allowed us to manage the projects, right? So whether it's somebody from my leadership team, or my project managers, or myself, whether we're running a project here in Lincoln, or in Denver, or Miami, or Croatia, we do business in all of those areas. It allows us to simulate like the digital conference room. It allows us to simulate like we are your advertising team, your marketing team, your web developer. We just don't office with you. We're officing with you digitally. But then the beauty of it is we have that running thread, which we use for accountability. So inbox management sucks.
Yeah.
And we really had to figure out like how are we going to get away from that, right? Because like client sends over email saying, hey, here's the logo file. But then in that same thread, 3 days later, you've already changed topic three times. And now that's a nightmare to manage. So we set very clear expectations with every client. This is Basecamp. This is what we're going to use. You're not going to email us. This is how we're going to use it, right?
Yeah.
And so the first part of our contracting, like sit down, is about 20 minutes dedicated to Basecamp training.
Hmm.
If they have Basecamp experience, we're like, that's cool.
Yeah.
We use it differently, so we're still going to do this. So that way, it ties into the next part of our system, right? Like whether it's somebody on the advertising side of the house or somebody on the front end side of the house, whether they've been here forever or they're brand new, you know, we try to make it very, very similar across all projects, so they can hop into any project and know, okay, this is where I go to get XYZ, no matter what. And that's the expectation that we set. From there. We are a Scrum agency through and through.
Make sure everybody knows what Scrum is.
Yeah. So Scrum is a fascinating system that really, when you break it down, it's like, duh. Like, it's amazing though what it does. So it's like, think of it as like columns, right? And you like the primary columns are going to be backlog, stuff I have to do. And then you move those cards to stuff I'm doing, right? And then you move those cards to stuff I've done. And you can have other stops in between and whatnot. It really depends on the project or the agency itself. But psychologically, it's incredible what our brains do, the amount of achievement we get when you move something to done. It's really, really cool.
It's a momentum builder for sure.
It is. And then the whole goal of Scrum, like their tagline is twice the work in half the time, right? It's not that you get faster. And to be honest, you do, because with practice becomes efficiency. Yeah. But it's really just understanding what I need to get done and then prioritizing the order in which I can get those things done. But then also setting realistic expectations of what can I actually accomplish this week. As human beings, we are awful at like really setting the stage for what can I actually accomplish, right?
Yes.
We're not good at that. So Scrum kind of takes the mystery out of that, and they have different ways to attribute time with tasks. So that's been a big, big part of our entire process. So then you take it one step further. Like, so if we're talking the web design side, we have that broken down one more step. We get everything signed off on in the front. So what I mean by that is on the development side, whether it's the sitemap or the content inventory or a homepage mockup, subpage mockup, wireframes, all of it, the clients approved all of it before we even install WordPress in our development environment. So then that way our dev cycles, they're not 3 to 6 months, right? It's like 3 to 6 days.
Wow. Because
there's no guesswork.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty awesome.
You've mocked everything up. You've had meetings. You've done the design ahead of time, and then it's and then you just build it. And that's
But now we don't go, to clarify, we don't go in and mock every single subpage. We don't wireframe every single subpage before we go in with the client, right? It's like, this is what the homepage will look like. Here's your standard subpage. Here's a standard specialty page. Here's a product page. Here's an article from the blog. So there's no mystery within each pocket of the site.
Yeah. And then do you have like a style guide that you build specifically for them and just say like, this is the general aesthetic we're going to apply across the board. So they get they get your templates, they get their custom aesthetic or style guide, and then the dev cycle, you create the site.
Right. So dev is phase two, basically. So phase one's planning, phase two dev cycle, and then phase three is revisions and polish. So in our contract, we build out two rounds of revisions, and then our project managers coach our clients like, hey, here's how the rounds work best. Here's the best way to get this information to our teams. Here's how we need it formatted, right? So that way, if Mitch was the lead on the project, but he's out of the office or working on something else, and Cam needs to hop in and run the updates, he can hop in, and he's like, he already knows what he's looking at because he's seen it a thousand times.
And you've got your, because you've got your system that's the same for every client, and Basecamp is organized the same for every project.
Exactly.
Let's talk about team structure real quick. I think a lot of people in our community are maybe in the 3 to 5 person range. And so they don't have, everybody's wearing a lot of hats still. There's not a lot of like, this is just our project manager. This is just our art director. This is just our designer. This is just our developer. It's one person might be all of those things, you know? So
there's nothing
wrong with that. That's just the stage. That's just the stage of a 3 to 5 person business. Now I would like to think that based on the ambition and the passion I see from a lot of folks, that they're aiming to scale up to something more along the lines of what you guys have done. And I'm wondering, team building wise, how do you prioritize which team members to break out into those solo roles first? Like, how do you when do you reach a point? When do you know that you've reached a point when you go, okay, enough, I need one person to definitely always manage, you know, projects, or I need one person to always be the point person with clients, or whatever the case may be.
So the way that we've done it, and this, I don't know if this is right or wrong. This is just what works at Evil.
Sure.
So my leadership team is made up of 4 people right now. It's myself, my CMO, my creative director, and then my lead project manager. And she also kind of like runs my life here in the office and the calendar side. And like, she takes care of she's amazing. All of them are amazing. Every Thursday morning, before we open the agency, we spend an hour in a leadership meeting really analyzing like what's going on in the agency, the finger on the pulse, right?
That's every day.
Every Thursday.
Every Thursday.
Once a week, yes.
Gotcha.
And so we were really looking at, you know, what's working well on front end, what's working well in advertising, what's working well in the project management, what about PR, what about video, because mm-hmm. those are other teams that we're really growing right now. How do we best work with the clients? What are we seeing as from an efficiency standpoint in Trello or Basecamp? How do we tweak and mod those? Mm-hmm. And so it's really just like an open forum with the team because they're in the trenches more than I am,
sure.
right? So I really rely on them to give me that feedback. How we got to the point where we knew, like, okay, we need the leadership team. It just, the first growth spurt that we went through, like, we came out of that, our knees hurt really bad.
What's a growth spurt look like? Just, I mean, I know you kind of know, everybody knows it after the fact, but let's say you're in the midst of it and you're just wondering why things are hard and frustrating and things are falling through the crack. Like, how do you know when you're in the midst of a growth spurt that's going to require this type of diversity of roles?
Stuff is bonkers and your hair starts going this way. that's hard. I don't think there's always going to be an ABC definition.
Sure.
For us, it was, we brought on one of our new business development reps. You know, mm-hmm. she's been with us for a long time now, but she's very, very likable. She's very well known in the region. And she outperformed all of the goals that she set for herself. Mm-hmm. Right. So like her production goals that she had, she eclipsed us to the point where it's like in these leadership meetings, it was us going, okay, how are we going to execute? Right. So it's like we have to hire around it. So the growth spurt for us was really looking at what was in the queue, what was already being worked on, and realizing we have two routes that we can take here, two paths. One is we can all work more hours, which sucks. or two, we can start really growing the team, and we chose that path.
Yeah.
Now, as an owner, I had to kind of hedge my bets there. And as an owner, you always will. But I mean, I reduced my income for several months to really pay for quality, really pay for the team members we needed.
Sure.
You know, we have a great internship to hire program, but you know, that's not always the best fit. Especially when you're in the throes of a growth spurt, where it's like, I just need this stuff to get done right now.
Yeah, I don't need to train someone or have the ability to scale someone skills up to where they need to be. I just need it done.
Exactly. Yeah.
So, what were the first hires in that growth process? Like, what roles did you prioritize establishing first?
Yeah. So let me give you some context on how we've structured the agency, right?
Sure.
So we have the creative side of the house, which for us, that's going to encapsulate. We haven't departmentalized further than that yet. We're planning on it, but we haven't yet. So for us, that's going to be branding, web design, web development, e-com. Right now, our video production team is lumped into that group as mm-hmm. well. You know, the stuff that's being made and put in the market. The other side of the agency is the advertising side. So everything from citation, app data management, SEO, SEM, social media, targeting, advertising, content creation, automation marketing, content for sites itself. I mean, once you have this shiny new thing, how do we blow the doors off of it?
Sure.
And then our third department at the time was business development, our salespeople. Mm. And so the way that we look at it is like the advertising side scaled organically at a rate we didn't anticipate. Originally, we thought it was going to be the web design side that was going to grow very, very fast. And it's grown well, don't get me wrong. But the advertising side just really created buzz in the region. Mm. So what we've done is we're always slow to hire. Okay. So for the longest time, you know, when we were a team of 3-5, we were wearing all the hats. I was executing on the front end side. Davey, my CMO, was executing on the advertising side. And then I was also kind of working in BD. And we hired this gal, her name's Natalie. She was our first like BD that has done amazing work.
Mm-hmm.
And so she would her whole job was go out in the marketplace, go to these networking events, really start establishing the relationship to free up my time from having to do that so I could help focus on executing on these projects.
Mm.
Well, then from there, we would hire around what she was selling, right? Because we sell on a needs basis. So it wasn't like, hey, this month we're going to go sell a ton of websites. It was it's always, we're going to sell the solution that our clients need. And the solution is going to be based on what they're trying, the problem they're trying to solve. But then also, who are we talking to right now? You know, some companies they're just, they haven't touched their site in 10 years and they're like, it's time.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
So like,
we need it
so
all
in that. Right. So in that case, we're also really methodical with like the time windows that we quote. So right now our creative team, more specifically people that are working on the front end side, there's 5 people there. Okay. So if we went and sold 8, 10, 12, 15 front end projects this month, which is doable, we would do one of 2 things. We would look at the team and say, okay, how soon do we want to get this done? Mm-hmm. Do we need to bring in another person, but also look at the budget? And that's where my CFO comes into play and really figure out, okay, like, do we want to commit to another salary because we don't know what the market's going to do 3 months from now? So yeah, we've got 10 projects right now, but we don't know what the market's going to do in 3 months. Alternatively, the option is to always just quote a bigger window for dev, right? And so you just set a good expectation. Like, you let people know, hey, this project, we're looking at a 3-month dev cycle. We can get through that more quickly and more efficiently, you know, if we're all playing for the same team. And that's just setting good expectations with your clients. Sure. But that's a really long-winded answer. I apologize for that. But it really boils down to, you know, what our business development folks are doing in the market is going to determine the types of people that we're hiring and how many of them. You know, like 8 months ago, we were not focusing on PR. Mm. We were not focusing on it. We knew we were going to have to, but we weren't even looking at hiring those folks. Now we have 2 of them, right? And so we didn't make those hires until we knew, here's what's in the market that we're actually already working on to justify the salary that we're going to have to pay out every month. Because payroll, you know, as you grow and you scale, I remember the first month that our payroll broke 50K. It's like, oh, like, wow, that's a lot of money. So, yeah.
So, okay. So now we're getting this feel for, I'm kind of trying to create this thread. So we're getting a feel for, what it means to grow, how growth happens, the kind of structure that's required and the kind of team members that are required to do that. You said the biggest piece of this puzzle is culture. Let's talk culture. About that now.
Yeah.
And I want to close just to give you a heads up. I want to close with how Divi fits into all of this. So we're going to talk culture, and then once we have an idea of, you know, what it's like to scale a company, what it's like to structure a company, what that culture might look like or your culture looks like, then I want to talk about how you've woven Divi throughout your processes and how it works for you guys. So let's talk culture.
So culture is everything. That's not lip service. Like, we fully, fully believe in that. We've had several people apply at the agency that has not been hired. That maybe they were like the most dynamite BD out there, that I know everybody in the region, or they have the best portfolio, the best book, or the best track record with advertising. But if they're not a good fit culturally, right? Like, if they're going to railroad the process and make it tough for the rest of our team to continue to jive, we don't want them.
Yeah,
we make it super hard to get in, but that's because we protect this culture so aggressively.
So what is your culture?
So we have 3 tenets of our culture. Okay. The first one is we've created a culture that celebrates failure, okay? Mm. And we're gonna let's quantify this real quick.
Yeah.
It's not like, hey, it's okay to screw up and just go on with your day. that's not like, we're not creating this like, oh, it's fine, like, dude, kind of do what you want. What we mean by that is we're all human beings. Mm-hmm. We all make mistakes, right? From the top down, I might be the CEO, but it doesn't mean that I don't make mistakes. Like, I screw up all the time.
Yeah.
So what we've done is we've created this environment that, like, we understand we're human beings. We understand we're going to make mistakes. That expectation is set with our client. Mm-hmm. The difference is we run postmortem every week, which in keeping theme with Scrum is really like a retrospective analysis of what went well and what didn't. Okay. Mm-hmm. But to back up, one thing that really makes Scrum work is the transparency.
Yes.
So every Friday we sit down as a team. And we look at, okay, what'd you do well? What didn't you do well? And then we celebrate that failure by figuring out how does this apply to the rest of the team, right? So if you're on my team, let's say, and let's say you break your footer.php file, like, let's really dig into what was the thought process you went through before the break occurred, mm-hmm. and how can the whole team learn from this moving forward to not repeat the mistake? Now, what that does in your Scrum sprints is that helps you level up and get more efficient at your craft. So, honestly, screwing up and failure is the best thing that can happen to you in business and as an entrepreneur and as somebody looking to perfect your craft. Because through failure is the only way that you get better at what you do. So we've created a culture that like makes it's a safe place.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? The second thing that we've done is like we've really dialed in on making uncomfortable the new comfortable. Okay? What we mean by that is, let's say you've got a business development person that it's their first sales job, okay? Let's say that they're not super comfortable with just walking into some place and saying, hey, I'm so-and-so with this company, and I want to talk to you about X, Y, and Z. I don't know you from Adam, but I have value for you right now, okay? If that scares them, we make sure that they're encountering that scenario as often as they can, because then when uncomfortable becomes the new comfortable, you are unstoppable, especially in a business development standpoint, but then, like also on a development side. Like some of my guys that when they first started with us, PHP scared the hell out of them, and rightfully so. Yeah. They pushed the update, and it's like, just everything's done. Like, scary. The same is true with like the advertising side. Like, we manage a lot of money for our clients, and for some people, that's terrifying.
Yeah.
And so to really push through that, but also make it okay to screw up, is pretty empowering. Mm. The last tenet of our culture is expecting exceptional experiences in every facet of life. Okay. Now that one's like a little like Zen-esque, I understand. But like,
yeah, repeat that just so we all make sure we're on the same page with you here.
Expecting exceptional experiences in every facet of your life. So the story I always tell is, so I have three kids. My wife, she's finishing her doctorate, so she works at the hospital on the weekends. So I'm full-blown daddy duty on the weekends, right? If you've ever done anything with three kids ever by yourself, like, that can be overwhelming. So, you know, one of our routines in the weekend is we'll go to like Whole Foods or go to Target in the morning, and we'll buy the food that we're going to use that weekend to cook or whatever. And having three kids can be chaotic, right? So it's like you could go into that grocery store with like, I'm just going to survive this trip mentality, or like you can go and just expect that awesome stuff is going to happen. Okay. Mm. And one of the first times that I really went into it with that mentality, my daughter, who's 9, her and I started having this conversation, and she really started to confide in me and open up about some of the issues she was having in her math class in third grade. And that led to her and I really talking through some of the stuff with math that, like, if I look back, it's like that moment took our relationship to the next level, because we were able to talk through stuff that like we're both interested in, but we were problem solving. But there was also like this level of trust, because she was really opening up to me. And that's when it like really clicked for me. It was like, okay, it doesn't matter if it's business or if it's personal relationships or if it's just like your daily delta. If you expect that everything's going to be incredible, and even when it's not, it's still incredible, because again, make uncomfortable your new comfortable, and have a life or a culture that embraces failure. They all build off of each other. And what it's done for us at Evil is it's created this team of power homies. And we all rely on each other day in and day out to make sure that we are cohesively moving our agency towards our goal. And then in the theme of complete transparency, everybody knows where we're going.
Yeah.
So super long-winded, I know that.
No, it's great. No, it's great.
That's what we've done. So how Divi ties into that.
Yeah, let's talk about that.
The transparency factor. So about 95% of the projects that we build on the front end side, we're using Divi. A couple reasons. One, it's stupid efficient. The Divi library was a game changer for us, because, you know, yeah, you can save CSS and JS files, and I mean, you can boilerplate out PSDs, whatever, but like to just save the entire module or section or page layout and then just pull that into a build, like, wow. Talk about hacking efficiency and like your time for execution. So it makes it very, very easy for us. It's pretty rare that we build a site and then we hand it off to the client and that's the end of the relationship. But in that event, Divi makes it very, very simple as well, because of the incredible video documentation that exists. And then also we've built out a lot of tutorials based on these Divi layouts that we're building in the library. So it's like we've kind of built a package that's twofold of like tutorial screenshots, video documentation, sets you up for success, Here's a 2-hour training session if that's in your contract, and off you go.
Nice.
But the front end team has really, really scaled and grown their skill set within Divi, but now our advertising team is using it to where two things happen when a build is done. It goes over to the advertising side, like for SEO, for example. So we have consistency across the board. So whether, regardless of the side of the industry that we're in, our SEO team or our advertising team, it's like they're hopping into the same GUI every time. So there's not a learning curve where it's like, crap, this one's visual composer. Crap, this one is on Salient. Crap, you know what I mean?
Sure, like, sure, they're,
it's all the same.
It's all the same, which
makes, makes it super efficient. But now the advertising team, like running targeted ads in the social space, is spinning. They're spinning up landing pages using Divi, but they're able to take the Divi library that front end has created and work, hack their workflow because it's like, this is all stuff that's already available to me. So we're working smarter, not harder, because Elegant Themes went to bat and built something that like solves a very real problem in the market. It really, really does. And that's why we're a Divi agency. It's just, it's made our lives easier. It's taken a lot of the guesswork out of it.
And it sounds like because you're able to have that, you know, I guess efficiency of building things in the creative side and having that go over to your advertising side is, again, same way that you talked earlier about with your clients, you have like your template pages and then you have your style guide. In essence, once the website is done, all the individual elements on all the pages that are saved to the library become the style guide for your advertising team. They can pick and choose what elements they want or what styles they want, and then create landing pages for ads or whatever.
Right.
What do you do when you have an advertising client who's not on Divi?
So that happens often, right? Like the entry point to the agency is not always the same. We have some people that come to us like, hey, we just had our site built 3 months ago. We're not in the market to rebuild, but we really need help with traffic. If they're not on Divi, that is the circumstance where there is the learning curve. Now, luckily,
so you're not saying no to it. You're just accepting the fact that, okay, this is going to be a little harder.
as long as it's a good fit for the agency. We say no to projects all the time, but the driving force is not going to be what theme or frame is it built on. It also depends on the goals, right? Mm-hmm. So like one campaign that we're running right now that we couldn't control the back end of the site at all was the National Guard. They hired us to run a targeted ad campaign to drive traffic to help increase potential recruitment opportunities. Now, because it's a government organization, obviously I can't build a landing page for it because that has to go through the proper channels for approval. And they said no. You know, it all has to be this site, this URL. This is where you're driving traffic. So it's like it's very situational at the same time. So how we structure those projects. I mean, there are some team members that they have more experience in the back end of WordPress, not just with Divi. So they would potentially be the right candidate on the advertising side to run those efforts because of their skill sets. Alternatively, that we could treat that as an opportunity to level somebody else up, right? Here's your introduction to Visual Composer. Have fun.
Oh, I love that. So, okay, so let's... quickly get back to Divi. I want to make sure we covered our bases there. So we talked about how kind of the process of using it. Your big, you know, major thumbs up was we use the Divi library. It's our lifesaver. What are other ways in which you're using Divi that people running or scaling an agency might not think of at first? Things that you've learned along the way or tips that you've come across that you guys find really, really useful? Just want to make sure we're covering all those bases.
Yep. Leverage the hell out of the community. Okay. Mm-hmm. Here's what I mean by that. The amount of third-party providers out there that are developing plugins, child themes, different things to help you hack your workflows are incredible, right? So I got to cite my homie, John Wooten. John builds incredible child themes. He's very good at what he does. Superfly is awesome, right? I'm not an affiliate. I don't make money off that. Like, I'm just showing love to my homie there. But, like, you only have so many hours in a day, okay? And there's only one thing in this life that you cannot hack or scale, and that's time. Mm-hmm. You can work more hours. You can sleep less. But that's not sustainable, right? So work smarter, not harder. You could write a custom solution for these, let's say, hover effects on images for your client. Or you could just go download Image Intents and install that plugin, and off you go. You're to the races, right? Yeah. So it's like It really, I would say it comes down to your scope and your budget for your client. If you are like in the early stages of growing an agency and you're taking projects because you have to, and you're not always taking the projects with the best budgets, right? Like, make sure that you're hacking that process. Like, use those plugins. A $15 plugin to save you 3 days of work, man, that creates a pretty good spread in the end.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Child themes. I mean, you know, do your research to know which one, what you're getting, make sure it's well documented, but like, that's another great way to really get acclimated to Divi, but then also to really understand the pure, like the true potential of it without having to invest the time and like, I have to go write all this custom code.
Right.
Okay. And then the snippets and the tutorials that you guys provide. I mean, the amount of times that I've not the podcast, but the Divi quick tips.
Yep.
Like, the amount of times that I've watched one of those and you've saved me like a day's worth of work. like oh, thank you. Like, those are so powerful though. And I really would suggest that more people use those because they are gold. They really, really are.
For the community. That sounds like as good a place as any to wrap things up, because I can't, I honestly can't. No, I mean, when it comes to getting things going and kind of encapsulating everything you've talking about, I love that idea of hacking your workflow and making sure that you're not punishing yourself by repeating the work that others have done, maybe even better than yourself, and just using it. Just take off from there. You know, we've talked about this in a couple episodes now. It's been sort of a theme for a while from Jill Sessa's episode of, you know, focus on your genius, like do your thing,
right?
Allow others to help, hack your stuff together, make it into something that works exceptionally well for what you're doing. Expect exceptional experience and just do the damn thing.
Yeah. Make it happen. Right. Like I'll end with this. And this is a piece that I do with public talks or with my team all the time. Like, you are the only person that can control what happens in your life, right? We can't control everything, but we can control how we react to it, and we can control whether or not we go make something happen. If there's something you want, if you want to scale to 24 people or 240 people, the only person stopping you is you. Straight up. The market is the market. The market will always be the market. If you want to go get shit done, go get it done, right? Like, go find your clients. Go work your ass off. But the only person making excuses and stopping you from doing that is you. So I live my life by that. It's kind of my mantra, and it's served us well.
Well, that's all for this episode of Divi Nation. Thanks for tuning in. I just want to give another big thank you to our guest, Andrew Tucson, for coming on the show. If you have any questions about what we discussed in today's episode, feel free to leave them in the comments section on the Elegant Themes blog, and we'll be sure to respond. Thanks again for tuning in. I look forward to seeing you all around the community. And as always, I will be back right here next week with another episode of Divi Nation.